This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Okay, so with the Metta Sutta that we've just chanted, the benefits of the Metta Sutta is that it gives you a sense of at least a small degree of, say, positivity, joy, the loving kindness, the compassion, the goodwill, positive feeling, and so it increases the energy for meditation practice. It increases say positivity, and in a sense that the loving kindness, the metta meditation, it counteracts those hindrances, those things which will obstruct the mind going, say, into peacefulness, into a sense of, say, like relaxation, balance, and stability of mind. The loving kindness, the generation of loving kindness, counteracts many different. Say garden variety emotions like irritation and even things like jealousy, ill will, all the things that we can possibly come up against in our day-to-day life, that the loving kindness will counteract and balance out those emotions which can obstruct the development of the increasing peacefulness of the mind. Okay. Back to you, Rachel. Okay, thank you kindly, Rachel, for setting everything up. Beautifully done. Okay, so with the development of the meditation practice, so that every single one of us, we all have different reasons to come to the path, the practice of meditation, and every single one of you knows just how how busy and how demanding and how potentially stressful one's working life, one's family life, and especially with the whole COVID pandemic experience, there's a lot of pressure on people in many, many different areas. And by the development of meditation, that it increases our potential to deal with stress, to deal with difficulties, and to develop the insight knowledge, the understanding and awareness of how to deal with all the stuff that is coming our way with our our day-to-day experience. So as we develop the meditation over weeks and months, you know, the things that are most obvious to all of us are increasing, say, stability of mind, increasing emotional stability, understanding and awareness into emotions, into mind states, into oneself and other people, and the things which are actually going on around us in the world. And so what happens is, with that increasing awareness, stability, understanding, it gives us the potential to to deal with, and deal with skillfully, you know, our personal experiences, the family dynamics, and even things like difficult people. You develop this intuitive awareness and understanding, which gives you the ability, the knowledge to work with and comprehend and sort of like to deal with, to react to different experiences that we go through, and to approach them in a more sort of skillful format, you know, because essentially the Buddhist path in all its facets is a wisdom based teaching from start to finish. And you know, so even though people in the beginning stages, they may, you know, especially usually after at least, you know, 4 to 5 sessions, people start to feel the effects of the practice, and they may have improvements that they may not necessarily fully appreciate, that other people can see sometimes more clearly than they can themselves. So in the beginning stages, people may think that, you know, that I'm still not really that peaceful, or my mind's a little bit too busy and whatnot. But one thing you see is the people around you can see you sometimes more clearly, more objectively than one can see oneself. Because you know, it's sometimes very difficult for people to stand outside of one's own feelings, one's views, one's opinions, but the family members, the friends and the partners can sometimes see the progress that one is making a lot more quickly than one can oneself. So with this path of meditation, that it has many, many benefits to it. You know, there could be easily a dozen I could think of off the top of my head. And, you know, slowly over time, as the months and the years go by, that beneficial effect, that wholesome effect on one's mind, one's personality, will go from the surface level to to much deeper levels within the mind. It will actually go into the personality, the character, and permeate one's nature. And if you get someone who meditates for like a full 12 months, you know, it's absolutely obvious to everyone, even people who don't necessarily know that they're practicing, that this person is doing something something different, something beneficial, and they can see the change and the benefit So the change and what would you call it, say the benefit that you that one is within one's character. They can see the good things that one is developing, because with meditation, it's like one is so becoming a good person, developing good attitudes and whatnot from the inside out. And it's something which goes deeper, deeper into the personality as the years go by. And the monks can usually see it very, very quickly. Anyone who comes into the monastery who meditates on a regular basis, even a daily basis, it's obvious to the monks and nuns that this person is practicing, because the personality is much more aware, it's much more sensitive, and there's the intuitive intelligence is there, the ability to connect and understand other people. It's something that you actually see in the other person, even if you don't know them. They just walk into the monastery. It's There are certain things that sets them apart from mainstream people in general society. So I'll make a start with the meditation. So I'll do, we've got 30 minutes for the practice, so I'll split it up into three main areas. So we'll do 5 minutes on, so people can get a feel for these different practice, 5 minutes on reflecting, or I say several minutes, at least two or three or so, on all the good things that you've done for, say, all the good things that you see within oneself, all the good qualities you see within one's personality, one's character. And then we'll reflect on all the good things that we have done for our family, friends, for people at work, for people in, say, in general society. So, in the beginning, we'll look internally, then we'll look externally. So, easily people can reflect on, say, like a number of things over at least several minutes, maybe up to even up potentially 5 minutes maximum. And then we'll do a 5 minute focusing on, say, dark color. Meditation, which is focusing on, say, the blackness, the dark color that we see in the mind with one's eyes closed. So this is a very very easy kind of practice for raw beginners, even for intermediate, for advanced people. And the reason it works so well, as I've mentioned previously, that it draws your attention away from the physical body, from thoughts, from feelings, and it's a very, very neutral practice, and it allows people to calm down actually more quickly than virtually any other practice that I've seen. I mean, for many, many years, very effective. And then after we do that, we'll go to the breathing meditation, and we'll use a fairly narrow focus, focusing, say, around the mouth, focusing around the mouth, and we'll should be able to get reasonably peaceful with those two preliminary practices, and then that more sort of focused, sharper practice for, so roughly about 20 minutes. So with the beginning instructions, if we close our eyes and just check one's posture, make sure that you have your back straight, your head is upright and comfortable, and you've got nothing tied around the throat, around the waist, around the wrists, nothing tied around the body to restrict you. And then what I will get you to do Just to make sure, just make sure you can breathe fully. Keep my eyes open. Breathe fully into the chest, into the lower belly, unrestricted. And so we'll make a start with that particular, that would be the Anapanasati. Actually, we'll start with the from the beginning. I get distracted. So what we'll do first is we will close our eyes, and I want you to focus on all the good things that you see within one's character. So I want you to talk to oneself, and the good things that you see is it could be something like, because I'm a Buddhist monk, that I'm under obligation to be kind and compassionate and helpful to other people, and to keep a what's the word an acceptable standard of behavior with the monastic form. So you reflect within oneself, like I could potentially be, say, like a kind, compassionate person. I'm helpful and caring of others. I support, could support my family and friends, and potentially, say children with the family members. And you can reflect on, I could be say a trustworthy and loyal friend. I could be a person who is reliable, attentive, a good listener. So, you look within oneself. Within oneself, and you talk it over, all the good things that you see within one's personality. And so you just do that for maybe, or you could actually do that, say, do that for, say, 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. And then after that, after you've exhausted all the internal possibilities, the good things that you see within oneself, reflecting just silently, then you can reflect on all the good things that you've done for even for oneself, because this is sympathetic joy, reflecting on all the good things you see in oneself, the things that you've done for other people. This is a personal thing coming from you, both internally, externally, all the good things that you've done for family, friends and relatives. And you must be able to think of at least probably 20, 30, 40 events, supports, good things that you've done for for people outside of you, even in general community. So we'll make a start with that one. And so for 2.5 minutes, I want you to just think over silently in the mind all the good things that you see in your personality. And then after 2.5 minutes, I want you to reflect for 2.5 minutes on all the good things that you've done for other people in general society, because this increases a sense of self-worth, positivity, energy. You develop this sense that I'm a good person within myself, and I'm doing good things in general society for others. So just close your eyes and do that practice for the next 5 minutes. move on to the second part of the meditation. So this is the dark color meditation, where we keep our eyes closed and we just focus on that dark color that we see in the mind, you know, that neutral shade of say blackness. And just do that for the next 5 minutes in a relaxed manner. So as this meditation develops, I want you to relax your physical body, relax all the muscles in your face, relax all the muscles around the eyes, the cheeks, the forehead, and just gaze into that darkness. If any thoughts or memories come up in this particular type of meditation, just sort of emotionally, psychologically, just relax as much as possible and don't push those thoughts or memories away, and don't grab hold if you can. Just sort of psychologically relax and allow them to come and go, and allow the mind to settle into the darkness. Okay, now we'll move on to the third part of the meditation. So now what we'll do is the breathing meditation, and I want you to focus your attention around the feelings around the mouth. And the reason I recommend this is because the nerve endings in the mouth are quite clear. You know, you can feel the mouth, the lips, the teeth to a degree. And when you focus at that point, it's quite clear to you. You know, when you look at breathing meditation, that part of the body is very clear and very distinct. And this is why I recommend people to focus at that point. You know, sometimes they're focusing like this one-pointed location under the nose, it's too sharp for some people. Focusing on the belly or maybe the chest might be too broad, but that particular area is quite distinct. You know, it's still sharp enough for tranquility to develop peacefulness without creating say excessive tension in the say in the forehead or the face. So for the next, say, 20 minutes, just focus on the mouth section, the feelings around the mouth, and you'll feel the sensation of breathing right on the periphery, right on the edge of that particular zone that you are paying attention to. And we'll do that for the next 20 minutes. So as you develop this meditation, try to breathe as deeply into the belly as possible, just slowly, relaxed, and try to relax the physical body as much as possible. So as this meditation continues, really try to focus on that sense of feeling, sensation in that particular area that will give you the sharpness, the clarity. You find that your mind is a little bit busy, a little bit restless, you know, thinking about, you know, events of today or last week or 20 years ago, it's good to reflect upon and understand what you're thinking about and the reasons why you do, because if one doesn't understand why one keeps, say, entertaining different thoughts and feelings, and why one is attached to certain events of the past, then it's much harder to let go of this phenomena. So one can just sort of gently inquire and understand exactly what one is going through on a emotional level. And because when you understand what you're going through emotionally within one's personality, then one is teaching oneself, one is teaching one's mind to know and understand and let go. So, you know, that's the purpose of wisdom in the Buddha's teaching, to understand and let go. So when one thinks too much, one feels too much, one is too attached. You know, one has to, you know, focus there and to know and understand and to gradually let go over time. So we're coming towards the end of this session. So just look back, see if you can see any change in the level of peacefulness of the mind. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. I'll just wait for Rachel to come back and we'll just see if there's any questions at all on the meditation. Sorry, the what? Oh, unmute, yep. Yeah, that was actually passed to me by a gentleman called Scotty who now lives in the Philippines because he'd been trying to meditate for a number of years and with the breathing meditation, walking meditation, but that particular one, because it was so very, very neutral, worked very, very, quite well for him. But with Gail, with the with that principle, I mean, you can still focus on even on any color. Like if blueness is the distinct color in the mind, you can focus on that, or you can change the way you look at things. You can focus on, say, like any lightness, any white color, white energy in the mind. So the bottom line is, whatever works for you, whatever gets good results, is the way to go. The customers are happy. So did you have any particular subject? Kindness to oneself, or kindness to others, or just general kindness. Okay, so with that principle of kindness, that I mean, it can be have a number of facets to it, but in essence, that you're looking at, say, goodwill towards oneself, goodwill towards other people. And every single one of us know that people who have goodwill tend have more friends, tend to get along with other people much better, create less problems for themselves and for others. And in general sense, they tend to be just a good human being in, say, like general society. It's something, you can feel with anyone really, who actually has that inside them, and it's something it can actually draw people to you. When people are naturally kind, that usually find half the human population tend to be drawn to that person because they have good vibrations. It's you find that people who are hostile like overly hostile, aggressive, negative, pessimistic, fault finding. It doesn't necessarily feel good to connect with people like that. And some people may think, oh, if you're too kind, that people will step on you and push you around and basically take advantage of you. But you just basically just set the boundaries. You can be a good person. You can like yourself. You can like others. But if people start jumping all over you, you basically just you just set the limits, the boundaries. But in essence, that you're bound to have much greater benefit with that kind of attitude, because in general society, the vast majority of people respond more positivity, in a more positive manner, a more effective manner, when you project that kind of energy towards them. People, vast majority of the population don't want to be disliked. They don't want people to hate them or to be angry with them or to look at them in a bad way, because it just makes that person feel bad. And the vast majority, the majority of the population, they're motivated by positive feelings, feeling good. So if a person has good vibes, is friendly, helpful, it's gonna get you a lot further than being forceful and loud and aggressive and pushy and this kind of more that kind of format. The what's the word? The carrot. The carrot and apple is far more effective than using the using the stick on other people. So kindness to oneself, if I say, like, in a nutshell, kindness to oneself. How do we develop that? So, how do I like myself? How do I appreciate myself? So, that principle that we did in the at the beginning of the meditation, looking at all the good qualities within oneself, that is a way to be kind to oneself, to recognize the goodness, the good qualities within one's character, reflecting on all those good things that one has done for others in general society, family, friends, and relatives, general society. That's it's it's seeing the goodness in one's personality. And that's being kind to oneself, seeing the goodness in oneself. And being kind to others, one can offer, say, like, a kind word. You can give maybe a poor person a couple of dollars, or for a snack, or maybe $5 for a meal. If you see someone who looks really hungry, they look destitute. I've got a person who's sleeping at the side of the street, or any kind of person within the homeless category. That even $5 worth of food can be enough to get them from one day to the next. If you buy even things like raw foods, like a bag of fruit and vegetables, is enough to keep some people going for 24 hours. So it's not to be underestimated, and I've seen people who've gone without food for days and can physically cope with that. But there's all sorts of little things that you can do. You see opportunities to I've got a little ad here. Okay. This, when you see different people and you see the circumstances that they're in, you will see ways and means to assist them, either in small ways or big ways. There could be someone that you could give advice to, or you could see an opportunity to help them or support them in some way. All of us can see this, over time. When we contact different people, you see, like with myself, if I see an opportunity to help somebody, I just go right ahead and do it. I don't think too much. In my position, I don't have much to lose. You know, I don't have much to risk by extending myself with others. You know, it's I've got virtually nothing to lose in the position I'm in. But you know, each person has financial limits, emotional limits, time, energy, all the rest. But you know, you just make it a point every single day, go out of your way to help someone, and then maybe as the days go past, you help two people, three people. You just do what you feel comfortable with, and you can feel good about that. You can rejoice in that. You know, I've been a benefit to others. There was that classic tale of in a nutshell, there was an older lady living on the North Shore in a big mansion on a big property, whose husband had passed away, and there was a family next door. Husband was a businessman. I think his wife might be working part-time with three children. And each morning, the mum of the family would take the milk and the bread and the newspaper up that older lady's long driveway, and because she had arthritis and placed it at her doorstep. And she did that for at least 2 years, 2.5 years. You can check it out on Google. It might be there. And she wasn't out to get anything from that older woman. You know, she knew she was in pain. You know, she had knee and hip pain. So, you know, it was a nice thing to do. So, and what happened was that elderly lady, she passed away, and she had no family, no children, no relatives, you know, real sort of close relatives to speak of. And she bequeathed that property, which was on the North Shore and was worth, you know, a bomb. It must have been worth absolute minimum $2 to $3 million at a guess. And she bequeathed that, say, $2.5-3 million property to that lady, that family, just that act of kindness, taking the milk, the bread, the newspaper up each morning for a couple of years. And then you see the power of the karma, that wholesome karma, supportive karma, and then you really see what it can do. You know, when you do something good for someone, it can come back to you. It could easily come back to you, you know, in your own lifetime. It could come back a dozen times. It could, if it's really big, it could come back 100 times, 1,000 times over several lifetimes. It's something, you know, that the Buddha spoke about in the sutras. You know, you can do a word search, say on merit, on good karma, and you know, they're talking about coming back 1,000 times, 10,000 times. You know, if you give to the Buddha and the community, you can't calculate that level of merit, how many times it comes back to you. And so there was a little window there about, was it hindrances, was it? Hindrances in meditation from someone? Was it Bob? Bob, but let me just flick through. See if I can see Bob. Did you ask about hindrances in meditation, Bob? Okay. All right, so as all of you know, the major categories, in a nutshell, so we have five hindrances, which are obstructions to, say, very, very deep, tranquil samadhi, and that is sensual desire. Number two is, say, anger or aversion. Number three could be restlessness and worry. Number four, hiriyotapa? It's like worry and scruples, worry and, say, moral infringement of moral values. And number five, skeptical doubt about the teaching, about what you're doing with your practice, you know, especially with one's practice, with one's life. That skeptical doubt is in essence, to be quite specific and accurate, it's about the path. It's about the teachings, the Buddha's teachings. That's why they call it skeptical doubt. It's about the Buddha's teaching, essentially, the path of practice. So in brief, sensual desire is all those things in the world that we like, that we enjoy, that we rejoice in, that we're attached to. Just the obvious things can be food. It could be things like nice food. Good quality restaurants and the company of people that we really like. Could be nice cars, flash homes. Anything you can possibly think of that you love and enjoy, and gives you a sense of well-being, enjoyment, and like pleasant feeling. It's something you really like to do. You like to enjoy. Company of good quality people, and it's something that it can't be dismissed, because what's the point of living in the world and dismissing all these things on all levels? Because in essence, it'll make a person quite miserable if you want to push away all those things that you enjoy in one's life. You may feel that you have nothing to live for. So my attitude is to enjoy one's life, is to have quality of life, but in essence, just protect oneself. If you don't harm oneself and you don't harm others, you're in a very, very safe parameter when it comes to, say, sensual delight. And to counteract sensual delight, it's good. All these five areas is something that you need to reflect on. So come to an understanding of, and say number two, that the anger and aversion can be balanced by, say, love and kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, developing that sense of goodness, recognition of goodness in oneself, what has done for others, even the sense of goodness in other people, all the good qualities of the people that you have around you. Meditators tend to be much more sensitive, much more intuitive when it comes to other people, with their vibrations, their moods, and this and that. And so what else can we do for ill will, but also reflections on karma. Even if you've got someone going completely nuts on you, you think to yourself in one's mind that person is, in essence, they won't get away with anything. That karma that they generate will come back to them, and obstruct them, create problems for them, make them unhappy, all sorts of things. No one gets away with anything. So, but there are skillful ways of dealing with these kind of people. And the number three, say, like restlessness and restlessness, and what would you call it? Restlessness, and I think it's more like mental worry. Restlessness and agitation of mind, but in essence, that one has to, understand what one's, with all these five areas, what one is going through and why and where and how. And it's very difficult to let go of anything if we don't really understand what's happening. And so, but in essence, say, like restlessness, distraction, it's something which you, in essence, there are sort of things that one can do, but the bottom line is you've got to understand why. There could be a dozen ways of working with this, but each individual has to understand why we feel and think the way we do. Each person knows themselves better than anyone else, and one has to understand how one ticks in order to become free from these hindrances. So the fourth one is concerned with, say, like moral precepts and scruples. And so when one, when one, say, has infractions of moral behavior, one does things which are tricky or dodgy or sneaky or, you know, rips people off, and it sort of breaks, you know, like the five precepts or lives one's life in a, like unwholesome manner, then one will feel that there's going to be an effect. So if I don't do anything dodgy or sneaky, you know, it's going to come back on oneself. You know, one is going to feel the effects of that behavior, because, you know, the mind and the body and the universe works on natural laws, and every move that we make will have an effect in our world. You know, it's like our world, how can I explain it? Our mind, it teaches us that the moods, the feelings we have, they are our teachers. So, you know, if I move in a certain direction and you know, it doesn't feel good or it gives rise to bad results, then you've got to pull back. You know, you've got to really reflect on what I am doing and why. The benefits and drawbacks. And then number five is skeptical doubt, which is essentially about the Buddha's teaching, the Dhamma, the path to enlightenment. It's not about, essentially, it's not really about doubt about any old thing, about whether I should buy, you know, this kind of cornflakes over a particular, you know, could be other brand, or, you know, just sort of little doubts that one has. But it's the real... what's the right word? It's the real sort of deep, earthy doubts about, say, the path, the Buddhist path to realization. And there could be something. There could be things like, what would give rise to doubt in a person? It could be like lack of knowledge. The person is just not well read enough. They haven't studied. They haven't researched. They're not sure, they don't know, you know, they're confused. They could have too much knowledge. They could have so much knowledge, they're completely, they're befuddled. They don't know what to think, they don't know which way to go. I've had people tell me previous, you know, they deliberately avoid reading books because they get even more confused. In essence, so like doubt, and also what one could lack faith. And so how do I generate faith within oneself? You know, I may need to know exactly what the Buddhist teachings are. You know, I really have to reflect on, you know, is this actually working for me, or what I am doing, am I wasting my time? You know, why do I doubt what I am doing? You know, sometimes people have past karma. You know, we had a monk who was a Buddhist monk for several years, woke up one day and felt that Jesus was calling him. So, you know, you've got people who've got a mix of, say, Buddhist and Christian karma. And this Christian karma was quite pronounced, to the point where he had to leave the monastery and go and join the monks at New Norcia, who are a good bunch of monks, from what I've seen, quite sincere and long-term practitioners. And it was quite funny. I mean, somebody just told me that we actually had more in common with the monks, the Benedictine monks from New Norcia, than we had with people in general society, except, you know, with the exception of the Buddhist practitioners, we have far more in common. But, you know, people in general society, we have more in common with the monks from New Norcia as, say, like Christian practitioners, as monks within the Christian faith, which is exactly true. And, you know, they have a long history a very solid tradition of mendicancy, like almsgiving, community support. You know, they do many things that the Buddhist monks do. So what else for doubt? You know, you really need to understand why you doubt. And what am I missing? What's actually missing from my practice? What do I need to say hone in on, or what skills do I need to sharpen up? Am I lacking in mindfulness? Do I get really distracted? Am I lacking energy? Do I like to sleep till, you know, half past 7, 8 every morning? Because I've run out of, I don't know, maybe good quality coffee, or God knows, you know. I mean, when I, like, for example, like these days, like when I drink tea, I mean, I have two tea, doesn't matter how small the cup is, I have two tea bags every single time. And if I'm busy, I mean, I can have, you know, I can knock back 6 tea bags in a day. I mean, without a problem. I find it, you know, it's, I feel, mentally, I feel quite okay. Yeah, this is the first sermon. It's been great. It's been great fun. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you. Thank you kindly. And bless you all. Okay, take care. Take care. We'll catch up with you all later. Good night. Take care. And bye-bye.